Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It is true that both political parties have engaged in gerrymandering, the drawing of electoral maps to favor their party over the other. But after 100 years in the electoral wilderness in North Carolina, Republican lawmakers here have engaged in gerrymandering on steroids, and they have done so in ways that not only give them a clear and almost unbeatable advantage, they have disenfranchised voters least likely to vote for them. In recent court decisions over maps drawn by our GOP-controlled legislature, one judge declared those maps had been drawn with almost surgical precision to weaken the influence of black voters. Well, now the state's back in court over congressional and legislative maps that were drawn based on data from the 2020 census. A three-judge panel comprised of two Republicans and one Democrat heard the first of several cases last week, with a decision impending perhaps tomorrow. For the rest of this program, we take a closer look at the arguments laid out by both sides in that trial, what to expect next, and why it should matter to you. We're joined by WFAE's political reporter Steve Harrison. Will Duran is the political reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer, and Seema Iyer is an attorney and the chief legal correspondent for WJZY-TV, Fox 46. Welcome back to you all. Steve, let me begin with you. Given this state's recent history with gerrymandering and court cases surrounding those efforts, was it any surprise that the state found itself in court again last week over the congressional and legislative maps that have been drawn based on the 2020 census?
No surprise at all. Like you said, we went through this last decade for an entire decade. And Republicans were fully expecting, Democratic groups were signaling, some groups were even before the process started, that there would be litigation here. So Republicans were fully expecting this. I do think that probably played out a little bit into the maps that were drawn. I think there was a sense among the Republicans that if we are going to end up in court anyway, let's start the battle. Let's start the negotiations from a real position of strength in our maps, where we have maximized our advantage, and then we will kind of, go back and forth from there and get to a place where we're more if we lose, we are still comfortable.
Will both parties, as I said, engage in this practice? And certainly the Democrats in North Carolina did this when they were in power for so many years. Are Republicans here or elsewhere more rabid in their efforts, and given the authoritarian win-at-all-cost mindset that is emerging among Republicans around the country, is malintent easier to prosecute, to prove, or is it helpful? In other words, in a court situation.
The question of intent might actually not really matter too much in this case. One of the big arguments that the Republicans have made is that there's nothing in the state constitution that says that partisan gerrymandering like this is unconstitutional. So they say, yes, racial gerrymandering is unconstitutional, but partisan gerrymandering, which is what this case is all about, say there's simply nothing in the state constitution that says that that's wrong. So there's no legal basis for the judges to overturn these maps.
I just want to say, North Carolina does have the free elections clause. And throughout the trial, there was just so much testimony about the legislative intent. So, of course, Will is correct. But right now, there's only, 20 states that have this partisan gerrymandering rule, and that maybe just if you look at intent, couple that with the free elections clause, then you get to why partisan intent matters.
At last week's trial, both sides presented testimony from political scientists talking about whether or not they did the right thing, Republicans, in drawing these maps. One political science Michigan professor, Joai Chen, if I'm saying his name correctly, told the court that his computer simulation of 1,000 potential maps demonstrate that the one chosen by the GOP is a, quote, partisan outlier, which cannot be explained by North Carolina's political geography. Seema, if partisan gerrymandering is legal in this state, and it is, so far as we know, what difference does that make?
Because it's an outlier. Because I think if you look at the data, and again, you have to take Dr. Chen's testimony with all of the other experts that the plaintiffs presented. And if you look at the end of all of their maps, we were looking at something like billions of sample maps. And the fact that they were always skewed for Republicans, that's why it matters. Because again, I go back to this free elections clause as well as equal protection. There's just so many constitutional, whether it's the United States Constitution and the North Carolina Constitution, that gives a person the right to vote for their candidate of choice. And throughout the data with the maps, as well as the math, as well as you have the historian, Professor Laloudis, testifying about this history of racial oppression in the voting system in North Carolina, that Black voters have not had the opportunity to vote for their candidate of choice.
So there are two suits, Steve, one arguing that the new map disenfranchises Black voters and dilutes their political power. The second deals with the maps, which the plaintiffs say divide Democratic and left-leaning voters to create more safe seats for Republicans. Were both of these issues taken up in this case, or will the second of those issues be taken up in future cases?
No, all the lawsuits were rolled into one. Okay. So all this was decided, or not decided, but was litigated last week. I wanted to say one thing about, we talked a little bit about Joey Chen's maps, the University of Michigan political science professor who did some of the analysis. And his testimony was very convincing for the plaintiffs, who were saying these maps are real outliers. But at the same time, the Republicans have kind of pointed to his analysis as well, is saying that well, our maps are out there, but they're not that bad, because his analysis has shown that when he runs his 1,000 map simulation, a congressional map that gives the Republicans the advantage of 9 of 14 seats is the most common map. And the map, of course, is a 10-4, but they've kind of pointed to that as saying, well, we're not that bad. And they've also used his analysis to really poke holes at a map that one of the plaintiffs wants to enact. They want the court to enact a map with a lot of toss-up seats that could conceivably let Democrats win 8 seats. So I thought his was some of the most interesting analysis and testimony during the whole trial.
We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk about more what happened in that trial last week, the decision for which is coming quick. The trial was fast, and so is the decision. It's due out tomorrow. We'll do that with Steve Harrison from WFAE News, Will Duran from the Raleigh News and Observer, and Seema Iyer from Fox 46 here in Charlotte in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're spending the rest of the hour talking about the court case last week, which will have a decision probably tomorrow on the fate of voter maps for the legislative and congressional districts in North Carolina based on the 2020 census. Steve Harrison is here from WFAE, Seema Iyer from WJZY, and Will Duran with the Raleigh News and Observer. Will, experts for the plaintiffs and their lawyers have tried to prove last week that these new political districts are so skewed toward Republicans that they are nearly off the charts. How did those who testified for Republican map drawers counter that argument?
That's a great question. And actually, it ties into something that you just mentioned with General Eaton in the last segment, which is the Electoral College. Nationwide, we know the Electoral College is created to be kind of skewed towards rural areas, to give, you know, rural parts of the U.S. a little bit more political influence than more metro states. Republicans have said there's a similar effect here in North Carolina. The political geography of the state, they say more Democratic voters tend to cluster in cities, more Republican voters tend to cluster in rural areas and are more spread out. And because Republicans are more spread out, when you divide the state up into districts, you get more chances for those districts to be Republican leaning. So they say because of that, these maps are not that much of an outlier. And it just kind of makes sense due to the political geography of the state, similar to the Electoral College nationwide, kind of, you know, on a smaller level here in North Carolina.
So they're using the Electoral College to say that the maps that they're drawing justify minority rule?
I don't know that they specifically use the Electoral College analogy. That's my own analogy, but okay. I think it helps to kind of explain that to listeners on how that kind of that works. You know, everyone I think is familiar with that at the national level, and that's sort of the same argument they're making here at the state level as well.
In his testimony for the plaintiffs, Professor Chen asserted that a typical map would not only have more Democrat-leaning seats, but that the seats that favored Republicans would be closer to a 50-50 split, giving both parties a chance at winning in various districts. And when Western Carolina University political scientist Chris Cooper testified, he said that Republican mapmakers had divided Guilford County into three districts to dilute Democratic voters in Greensboro. But when lawmakers got their chance, they brought in Brigham Young University political science professor Michael Barber to the stand. He presented his own analysis of state House and Senate maps, and he told the court that witnesses for the Democrat-aligned plaintiffs differed on how many seats Democrats would be expected to win. Therefore, it would be too difficult for a court to determine what is fair and what is not. And he testified that his analysis does not indicate that Republicans had tried to draw maps that favor themselves.
So given the results of the analysis that I conduct and my review of the analysis conducted by other experts, it's my view that the enacted plan does not rise to that level.
But on cross-examination, the plaintiff's attorney, Stanton Jones, told Barber that his own analysis showed that Republicans outperformed the expected number of seats they would win. And then he asked him how Democrats did in his simulations.
Okay, I take it you don't know how many times Democrats outperformed a majority of your simulations for all those elections across all the House clusters you analyzed either, do you?
I have a feeling you're going to tell me.
It was zero.
Okay.
So, Seema, you're the attorney here. What does that tell you?
Well, to begin with, the fact that Barber was on cross-examination more than any other witness is not good for the defense, because the plaintiff's experts, when they were cross-examined, they really just weren't on very long. The defense didn't have a lot of holes to poke, whereas with Dr. Barber, looking at his total, like, he had this conclusion that it didn't rise to the level of partisan gerrymandering, but then he had to admit that he really didn't have any academic background in redistricting. He hadn't worked in North Carolina's political geography. He never spent time analyzing redistricting. He was never published on that. And these are all really important points when you counter the plaintiff's experts. He also admitted to misspeaking at his deposition. And then the plaintiffs recalled Professor Mattingly, who I believe was a math professor. And Mattingly then said Barber misrepresented his own research. So at the end of the day, that's not good for the defense.
This is one of those situations where, unless you are an attorney or a person who's deeply involved in political science and political maneuvering, your head could explode. Steve, what should we, as people who don't follow it that closely, who are not legal eagles, how are we to view all of this?
I think one thing to remember when the ruling comes down, most likely tomorrow, is that if the court finds in favor of the plaintiffs, you know, the groups who sued, that won't necessarily be a big loss for the Republicans who drew the maps. In a way, because if they actually win here at this before these three judges, this case will be immediately appealed to the state Supreme Court, where Democrats have a 4-3 majority. I think the Republicans are very, very okay with going back and getting to tweak their maps and moving it a little bit. They don't want this court or the state Supreme Court to impose their own maps. That would be the huge loss. But if they lose tomorrow and get another, you know, crack at the apple, that is okay with them.
But if they lose tomorrow, won't they simply appeal it, or will they appeal it?
I mean, it depends. I think this is, you know, just from talking to people, it depends on the if the three judges tomorrow find in favor of the plaintiffs and make the legislature redraw the maps, depending on what the parameters are that they've set around them, then the Republicans will be perfectly fine with that. Okay. They do not want this to go to the state Supreme Court where Democrats have an advantage. So they will say, look, we started off with 10 congressional seats and state legislative maps that give us X number of seats. We may give back a little bit. This is what happened in 2019. So I think they kind of see this as just kind of one step in this long, long process where, you know, it's kind of trench warfare between both sides.
As I mentioned at the very beginning, we have this history of this in North Carolina, SEMA. And the last time I think that this went to court, at least in one of the cases, a judge called what had been done in the map drawing that they used surgical precision to favor Republicans over Democrats. A different process was used in drawing these maps, however, but can historic precedent or past behavior on the part of those who draw these maps figure into the court's decision on how they should treat this case?
150%, yes. I think this trial court, as well as the Supreme Court, the North Carolina Supreme Court, are going to be looking at the cases. And yes, there are cases in the North Carolina higher courts, but more importantly and more instructive are the cases from North Carolina that have gone to the United States Supreme Court. And we talked about this last week. There was a case from 1993, and this involved Janet Reno, the Attorney General at the time. The North Carolina Redistricting Committee presented her with one black district, and she said, get out of here, go make me another map. And then they came back with two, and the second one was this sliver that looked like a lizard. Sandra Day O'Connor famously called it bizarre, and so that was kicked out, and it has gone through the United States Supreme Court system for decades. There was another case in 2017. This was when the court did find that race was the predominant factor in creating those maps. And I understand that it's partisan gerrymandering, but there was just so much testimony that focused on black voters not having the ability to vote for their candidate, their party of choice. And that's where I think they get to the partisan part of it.
This was a very, very quick trial, Will, and if there was a moment of drama in it, and there was, it was this big blow-up over the process. They changed the way they drew the maps this time. Allegedly, they did it in a way that was going to be completely transparent, and the public could watch things as it happened, because they put the maps that they were drawing up, I guess, on the internet or some kind of feed that the public could watch. But then on Wednesday, a top Republican redistricting leader, State Representative Destin Hall, said on the witness stand, under oath, that he had used secret maps drawn by someone else to guide his work. And that appeared to directly contradict what he had told Democrats when they asked him during the process, are you using secret maps? Oh, no, I'm not doing that. But clearly, he's admitted to it now. So he called his use minimal, and he called the maps non-consequential. What are the implications?
Well, the first implication is the challenger in this case are just furious over this. They say that the legislature, you know, withheld this evidence, you know, not just from the public while redistricting was going on, but also, you know, withheld evidence during the trial on this. You know, they didn't initially admit that these maps existed, then it kind of came out and they said, well, wait a second, why didn't you turn those over? And turns out, well, actually those maps have been destroyed and, they don't exist to be turned over. So, you know, the folks who are challenging this would have loved to see those maps to be able to analyze them, see if, you know, it proves that, oh, you know, the Republicans actually did use racial data in drawing these maps, or they actually did use partisan data in drawing these maps, which they've said they didn't, but those maps have been destroyed, so nobody can look at them.
Does it matter, Steve, that they apparently did not follow the process that they promised to use?
So You know, legally, no, I don't think. I mean, the legislature had set up this criteria kind of. I think this is definitely an embarrassment because they had talked so much about transparency and no outside data. Whether the case will really hinge on this, I'm not sure. I don't think so. But it was certainly an embarrassment to have talked so much about this, you know, this process that would be free of any data, free of any intent, and then, you know, to have it come up that they were going back and forth, kind of looking at little cell phone images and maps and things like that.
But Seema, what about the idea that these maps that this man has now admitted to using no longer exist? The existence of them was never divulged prior to his being asked this question on the stand, to which he admitted. And now the maps don't exist anymore, meaning that they cannot be produced. They were not produced to the defense prior to the trial, or to the plaintiff prior to the trial. And when the plaintiff asked for sanctions against the defense for having gone through this process that way, the judges denied that. What are the implications of that?
Okay, I think if it was in front of a jury, the implications would be far graver to the plaintiffs, because the plaintiffs would want the sanctions and therefore an adverse inference charge. So the jury knows that you can assume that these maps would have favored the plaintiffs. That's what you would ask for as a lawyer. But you don't need it, because these justices know what happened. They you can't unring a bell. However, I do want to see the justices at least make mention of it in their order or in their final statement, so that the North Carolina Supreme Court knows exactly what happened. And furthermore, besides Hall testifying that, I guess in his deposition, he said, oh, this was the game plan, these comparative maps, as opposed to on the stand saying, oh, it was just a frame of reference. Not only that, but he had his aide draw the maps. And the aide, and Will, correct me, I think you were probably in the courtroom, but the aide is a 2020 law graduate. I mean, talk about undue influence from your boss, number one. Number two is, when you've just graduated law school, do you really want to be tasked with redistricting maps for an entire state? Is this even, it shouldn't be allowed. Hmm. It's egregious. And I think the justices will take all that into account.
But this is an example, another example of dirty tricks being employed by Republicans around the country in states that are controlled by Republican legislatures to manipulate the vote total. Is this any different in any way, Will, from what Democrats did, at least in North Carolina, when they were in charge?
Well, I'd say the difference is mostly in scope. You know, Democrats obviously engaged in gerrymandering while they were in charge, but I think everyone has agreed that Republicans have been much more effective at it. And, you know, in part that, you know, people have said that's because there's new technology now that makes it easier.
Right.
Or, you know, it could go back to the whole idea that we were talking about earlier, the political geography. You know, since Democrats tend to live in the cities, it's a little bit easier to gerrymander them. You can just kind of stick them all into one or two districts.
You wrote about five takeaways from this trial that people should be aware of. Among them, the fact that there's a focus on giving Republicans a chance at winning veto-proof supermajority, which means that the governor could not overturn decisions made by the Republican legislature. Was there any attempt by the defendants to deny that as a motivation?
They didn't deny it as a motivation. They denied that, you know, in certain cases, maybe it wouldn't happen quite as often as the challengers were claiming. But in general, I mean, there was plenty of testimony that, you know, Republicans could get these veto-proof supermajorities, you know, if they got, you know, even just a very small, you know, simple majority of the actual statewide vote.
I have 10 seconds left here. The decision is expected tomorrow. The primaries are looming large, and that is why there's such a rush on this. And there are other cases pending. Am I right, Steve?
These all three lawsuits were rolled into one. So this is it.
Okay, well, we'll find out tomorrow. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Steve Harrison, WFAE News, Will Duran with the Raleigh News and Observer, Seema Iyer from Fox 46. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.